Take your career to the next level. The University of South Florida, St. Petersburg is offering a master's degree in digital journalism and design. Do the entire program from home and complete it in as little as 1 year. The cost is reasonable. The experience is invaluable. For more information, call 727-873-4544.
Discover your career in oceanography at the University of South Florida's College of Marine Science, where groundbreaking research meets hands-on learning. Located in St. Petersburg, Florida, we offer cutting-edge research opportunities with world-renowned faculty. Students at the USF College of Marine Science gain experience across the disciplines of oceanography to steer them on a course for greatness. Visit us at usf.edu/marine-science to begin your ocean journey.
From the College of Marine Science at the University of South Florida, this is the Rising Tides podcast. Join us as we explore how researchers are using cutting-edge technology to unravel secrets of the ocean. Here is your host from the university's Department of Journalism and Digital Communication, Professor Elliot Weiser.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. On this episode, we'll discuss a topic that you have heard quite a bit about. We record this podcast in St. Petersburg, Florida, so it's a subject of particular interest to Floridians. However, it is a global problem that poses serious implications long term. Our topic is rising sea levels, and we have the perfect guest to talk with. Don Chambers is a professor of physical oceanography at the USF College of Marine Science. Professor Chambers, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So sea level rise has been a topic of many studies, news stories, and countless dinner conversations. So let's put it in perspective. How serious of an issue is it?
Well, it depends on where you live. If you live right by the water, it's going to be a lot more impact than if you live in Colorado. But it also is kind of the canary in the coal mine of global warming, because it's one of the quantities that really reflects the Earth's energy imbalance, because 95% of the extra heat that has been trapped by the Earth over the past century has gone into the ocean.
So people that say there's no such thing as global warming, you would say, look at rising sea levels as proof.
Rising sea levels is proof.
So we hear a lot about melting glaciers and warming oceans. So describe how those contribute to rising sea levels.
So, you know, like I said, 95% of the heat goes into warming the ocean. As the ocean warms, the upper 1,000, 2,000 meters of the ocean, it's a small fraction of a degree that it's warm, but it's over a very big layer, and that causes the density to change and the volume expands. And then at the same time, the air temperature over the ice sheets has warmed, the water has intruded under the ice sheets, and the glaciers are melting at a faster rate than they have, you know, over the last century.
And that will just continue or accelerate?
It's both. It will continue, and the melting of the glaciers is likely to accelerate.
So is Florida more vulnerable to sea level rise compared to other states? I imagine it would be because it's surrounded by water.
Any coastal area is vulnerable to sea level rise. So Florida is surrounded by water, lots of coastal communities, lots of infrastructure near the water. But the same can be said about the Texas coast, Georgia, South Carolina, Delaware, anywhere in the U.S.
So the west coast of Florida is as vulnerable as the east coast of Florida. It doesn't matter whether you're Gulf of Mexico, America, or Atlantic Ocean.
So Florida is one of those places where the sea level is rising just about the same everywhere around Florida. But of course, on top of that, we can have events like storm surge from hurricanes hitting that will be on top of that sea level rise. And of course, that's going to be more regionally specific.
So are there other places in the world that are experiencing faster or more extreme sea level rises compared to others?
Oh, yeah. So If you look at it, it depends on the time scale that you're looking at it. When we talk about mean sea level or global mean sea level, that's kind of the statistical average of all the world's oceans. But if you look at regional sea level for the last 30 years, the Gulf of Mexico, North Atlantic is one of those areas that's been rising a little bit higher than the mean. The Western Pacific has been rising considerably higher than the mean due to some wind circulation changes on top of the ice melt and the just general warming. There's some areas that where sea level hasn't been rising as fast. One of those is actually the west coast of the United States.
Really?
So like California. It's been rising a little bit, but not nearly as much as the global mean. And again, that's just due to some changing weather patterns in the Pacific. It's called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. There's every thought based on what we know about it that in the next 20, 30 years that could reverse. Yeah.
How about around Alaska?
Alaska is... I haven't thought about looking at that map, but I suspect it is at global mean sea level or perhaps a little bit less.
So let's talk broadly for a second. What are the, other than rising levels, what are the risks of sea level rise?
You know, so let's think about St. Pete. The infrastructure of St. Pete, the storm drain systems, when houses were built around the coastal areas, they were built in 1950, 1960-ish time frame. Before that, most of the main building in the St. Pete, Pinellas County was more interior, not near the coast. Sea level was about a foot lower 50 years ago, 100 years ago, right? And so if we have storms now that don't have to even be a major storm and at high tide, that means that that water that could have drained out into the bay in the 1950s, 1960s is no longer draining out into the bays. That's why the flood risk around some of the coastal areas in St. Pete has gone up. And now people are experiencing 5, 6, 7 times a year, they have flooding during some of these storms in the summer months. Whereas before they go, oh, it never flooded here before. Part of that is due to the underlying rise in mean sea level.
Let's go to Europe for a second. The one place you read about rising sea levels and flooding is Venice.
Yeah.
So is that a perfect example of rising? It's just going to
get
worse?
I mean, Venice has a lot of issues
It's
in a lagoon. Right. It's sinking. Yeah. So it's that type of thing. It may come to a point. So I've been to Venice during some of these high water events that happen where they have platforms that they put out so that people can walk on, and you're walking on land, but it's surrounded by water, right? And so they had just have those all over the place. In the next 50, 60 years, it could come to that in some areas of St. Pete that at high tide, you're going to have water, you know, on a common basis there, especially when there's a storm.
Well, you see that, I think, in Miami on Route 1?
Yep.
I mean, they were having that problem already, correct?
Yeah. They call it sunny day flooding, right? And it doesn't have to be a storm right on top of you. It can be a storm out in the Gulf or farther away that's pushing water up onto shore.
So I'm interested in how researchers measure and monitor sea rise. Talk about that a little.
Yeah. So, I mean, the traditional historical way is from what's called a tide gauge. So you have a system set up that is affixed to land, and it's measuring how the water has moved over time. We have a tide gauge here in St. Pete at the Coast Guard Station, and it's been operating since about the 1950s, actually earlier than that, 1920s. But now to get a more global picture of sea level, we use satellites. And so the primary satellites bounce radar signals off of the ocean surface to get the range between the satellite and the ocean surface. We know precisely where the satellite is above the center of the Earth. you basically difference those two measurements, and now you know what that level of sea level is. And you do that every 10 days, every month, and you can see how it changes over time.
Really amazing. These satellites are hundreds of miles above the Earth, and they can do...
They're thousands of miles above the Earth,
and they can do that. Are there any recent or forthcoming advances in satellite technology that will improve measurement and monitoring sea level rise?
You know, the more satellites, these altimeters that we have up, and we now have a nice constellation of these satellites, we can get better timely measurements of it. Probably the new technology that's going to help us is not to measure sea level directly, but to understand the processes that are causing the sea level to change. And so one of them is satellite gravity. So this always shocks people when I say this, but when you think about the gravity of the Earth, it's not constant. It changes subtly as water is moving around on the planet, right? And so imagine the ice sheets are losing water, right? That's mass, right? The density of water is pretty high, 1,000 kilograms per meter cubed, right? They're losing tens of, you know, gigatons of water every year that goes into the ocean. And so the gravitational effect of the ice has decreased, and it's increased over the water. And from satellites now that we can determine that. And so there are improvements on that measurement so that we can determine even finer scale changes in this mass over the ice sheets and in the ocean.
Sounds pretty serious. Gravity could be changing.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing.
Well, it's natural. Mm-hmm. You're moving mass around on the planet. Okay. It happens seasonally. It happens on interannual time scales. You know, it's affecting the rotation of the Earth a little bit. I mean, if you're worried about time to the order of microseconds, which we are in navigation of satellites, you have to take that into account.
So let's talk about forecasting tools. How accurate are these current models for projecting future sea level rise? And how far into the future can they look?
So, yeah, that's a good question. So it depends on what your scale is, right? So if you're thinking about storm surge, like from a hurricane, like during Milton and Helene from last year, that's really dependent on how well the wind forecasts are and where the positions of those storms are. And so as we know from, you know, living in this area, those can change pretty rapidly a week out. But once you get out to about 2 to 3 days out, they've kind of constrained themselves. So one of my colleagues at the university, he runs a coastal model for the entire Florida peninsula, and he can predict sea level really accurately for these big storm events out to about 3 to 4 days. And that's about the best we can do right now for these storm surge type scenarios. Now, for in terms of the global mean sea level, that's a much slower process. And we can predict it out probably fairly accurately to 20 or 30 years. And then when you get beyond that, there's a lot more uncertainty because it depends on how much carbon dioxide we're putting into the atmosphere, how fast the ice sheets are melting. And so then it becomes a lot less predictable, you know, to 2100 or so. But we can even project out to 2300, 2400. And we know, just based on basic principles, that sea level is still going to continue rising. Even if we magically remove all the carbon dioxide, excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere today and don't put any more in, we've kind of baked sea level rise into the system from all the heat that the ocean has already absorbed, because it's going to take centuries to maybe 1,000 years for that heat to leave the system and kind of restabilize itself. And so by 2300, we're probably going to have lost a significant fraction of the smaller ice sheet in Antarctica, you know, that may have risen sea level by about 6 feet or so. By 2100, our estimates range anywhere from an extra foot to 3 feet of sea level. And that really depends on the ice. But the ice modeling is probably the least constrained aspect of that modeling.
Sobering,
yeah.
Sobering thought. So you've served as the lead author of previous climate assessments by the United Nations Intergovernmental, I'm going to get this right, Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC. Can you tell us more about the IPCC reports as they relate to sea level rise?
Yeah, so the IPCC has been in existence since the 1970s, putting out reports on kind of the physical basis and projections of where the Earth's climate is. And it's essentially a group of scientists from around the world, experts in their field, that come together and we examine the science and we come up with the synthesis of what do we know, what don't we know. And we only report on what there is strong consensus evidence of how the Earth's climate is changing and what the forecasts are. So, for example, if one study is suggesting sea levels going to be 50 meters, you know, 150 feet by 2100, but there are 1,000 studies that say it's more likely to be between 1 and 3 feet, we're not going to report in that IPCC report that sea level could be 150 feet. We're going to say it's more likely to be between 1 and 3 because that's the consensus of the science that we have.
Professor Chambers, thanks for joining us. On the next episode of the Rising Tides podcast, we'll be exploring something that has been described as a seagoing pickup truck. You'll have to listen to find out what I'm talking about. A reminder, a new episode drops every Wednesday. Please share this podcast with your family and friends and give us an excellent rating and review on Apple or Spotify. Until next time, I'm Professor Elliot Weiser.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Tides podcast, produced by the Department of Journalism and Digital Communication in cooperation with the College of Marine Science at the University of South Florida. Executive producers are Elliot Weiser and Dylan Furness. Producers are Jensen Horvath and Rhiannon McIsaac. Director is Christopher Campbell. And a special thank you to Dr. Mark Walters and to all of our guests from the College of Marine Science who shared their research with us.